So what I'm going to show you is a larger picture of the Chinese outside of mainland China, and where you can find yourself. And then also how the other local-born Chinese, that means non-Chinese-speaking Chinese, look at themselves, or how God used them in different parts of the world. So the first question we'd like to ask ourselves is that, since God is the Lord of history, what do we mean by the Lord of history? That means anything that happens in the world is under the lordship of Jesus Christ. So anything happens in our nation, in our people, is also under the lordship of Jesus Christ. Undeniably, among the Chinese people, there is a lot of suffering. However, that is under the lordship of Jesus Christ as well. So we like to look at ourselves. At this juncture, while so many Chinese are in mainland China, a small minority is outside of China. What is our role? The first question we have to ask is, where are the Chinese people? Now in this diagram, I have charted out for you three main districts. I'm going to introduce you three terms which I usually use. The first term is Chinese districts. Now remember, these are what I'm going to talk to you is Chinese in the diaspora, that means outside of China, okay? The second is Chinese majority district. And then third is Chinese minority. My handwriting is not very beautiful and not very legible, but I hope you can catch what I'm trying to say. Now for Chinese districts, I mean districts or parts of the world that speak Chinese. And there's only three districts like this outside of China, which is Taiwan, Hong Kong, and Macau. And there is Chinese majority district in which around 75% of the population are Chinese people. The rest are non-Chinese. And there's only one district like this in the world, which is Singapore. Okay, that's where you came from. No. How many of you came from Singapore? None, huh? And then for the rest of the world, we say that they are Chinese minority district. We say that those are the districts in which Chinese make up less than 40% of the population of the country in which they live. So if I try to separate the Chinese in this way, I would find that among the Chinese in the diaspora, 55.05% still live in Taiwan, Hong Kong, and Macau. And there are present approximately 50 million Chinese in the diaspora. And of the 50 million, about 55% live in the Chinese district. And then here, 4.2% live in Singapore, the Chinese majority district. And for the rest live in Chinese minority district. Now what I'd like you to focus on is not Taiwan, Hong Kong, and Macau, but this sector. Now among the Chinese minority district, we can divide them into different kinds of countries. Muslim countries. What are the Muslim countries? Indonesia?
Malaysia.
Yes, Malaysia. Good. Your geography is very good. What else? There's a very small British protectorate, not on the north.
Oh, Brunei.
Yes, Brunei. Very good. Very few people know where Brunei is. Now for the Buddhist countries, there are four. It is in Japan. What else?
Korea,
yes.
Burma.
Thailand, right. Now, by the way, I categorize the districts according to the research that I have done. And there is, in the exhibition room, a desk by Cowie, C-C-C-O-W-E. And there is a Chinese Church's Handbook. The Chinese one is thicker, and the English is an abridged version. So if you read Chinese, you can go to that desk. It's not for sale, but you can flip through it if you want to know more information. The English one is a little bit thinner, about, I think, 300 pages. The Chinese one is about 600 pages. So if you want to have more information, you can look that up. Now what I think you will be interested to know, how about North America? Now, actually, in all first world countries, which will include USA, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and all European countries, how many Chinese are there? Well, actually, the Chinese population only represent 4.1% of the total Chinese in the diaspora. And I marked this sector out. This sector represents the Chinese living in North America, including Canada and USA. So that's not too many. Sometimes if you go to Los Angeles, you feel that, oh, a lot of the Chinese people have migrated to Los Angeles. Yes, it is. But in comparison for the rest of the Chinese world in the diaspora, it is still a very, very minority. So this is the situation in which we find the Chinese people. We who live in North America represent a very, very small minority of the Chinese in the diaspora. Then the question we are interested in is, of course, how many percent of these people are Christians? Well, unfortunately, even if you go to church every Sunday and you feel, oh, and all your friends may be Christians, unfortunately, among these 50 million Chinese people, only 1.6%, 1.6% are Protestant members. So if I try to draw 1.6% in this circle, that means it will be about that much, 1.6%. So what does this mean? That means among every 100 Chinese in the diaspora, 98 of them are still outside the kingdom. So that tells you how urgent, how big a task that we have to face in the task of world mission. Then, all of you attend churches. How many different kinds of churches are there in the Chinese world? Here, I have a tree. I call this not the evolutionary tree, but the developmental tree of the Chinese churches. There are essentially three different kinds of Chinese churches. Well, I think I should stand over here. I don't want to look in the light directly. You can see the squares, the circles, and the six-sided figure. Each shape represents a different kind of a church, categorized according to language. The squares represent Chinese-speaking Chinese churches, CC, Chinese-speaking Chinese churches. Of course, in Taiwan, in Hong Kong, and Macau, in the Chinese districts, most of them are Chinese-speaking churches. And then, in the Chinese majority, in both the Chinese majority districts and also the Chinese minority districts, you can see that all the three shapes, the churches in all three shapes. This means, let us focus on the orange ones. The orange ones means NCC, that means non-Chinese speaking Chinese churches. That means they are still attended by Chinese people, but they are non-Chinese speaking. They may speak Thai, they may speak Indonesian, they may speak English. So these are NCC, non-Chinese speaking Chinese churches. And then how about the round ones? The round ones are called non-Chinese speaking mixed churches. That means the Chinese still attend these churches. They maybe Chinese would be majority, but then among them there are non-Chinese too. There may be, for example, in Singapore, a lot of Indians will go to Chinese churches. And then in Malaysia, some of the indigenous people or the tribal people, originally tribal but now they are in the city, they will join the Chinese churches. So much so that the church has become a mixed church. And in Australia, I observed one very strange phenomena. I once went into a church and I look at the pastor, he's an Australian. And then I look around, I find that 75% of the church is Asians. Many of them are Chinese. So we see this kind of churches. Maybe it is planted by the Chinese, but then some non-Chinese got mixed into it. And maybe it's planted by non-Chinese, but then Chinese swamp over it. So we have three different kinds of churches, and that phenomenon is particularly prominent in Australia.
Got a percentage, please?
No. I have to calculate if I can tell you. Well, we thank God very much that now, of course, all these churches are scattered all over the world. We have, at this point, about 5,000 Chinese churches in all these three districts. Now, usually, for a time, there were no connection whatsoever among these Chinese churches. But you've seen the movie. You've seen the movie last night, talking about, in the introduction to the movie, Reverend Thomas Wong talked about the Powi movement. In the 70s, God started a spiritual movement among the Chinese in the diaspora. We used to be a dish of sand. But then in the 70s, the Chinese churches in different parts of the world started to feel that we have a commonality, we have a common heritage. Why can't we work together? Why can't we join our forces together for the kingdom's sake? So in the 70s, we started the Powi movement. And tonight, in the media presentation, you will see the film again. So I'm not going to elaborate on that part. But suffice it to say, at this point, in this Powi movement, there are a series of interlocking phases of development, or overlapping phases of development. As Reverend Thomas Wong has said, in 1976, the Powi movement began. And after its inception, in this whole movement, we would see a series of four phases. They may be overlapping. The first is foundation building. That means building the understanding and the commitment and solidarity among the Chinese churches in the diaspora, whether they are NCC maybe the mixed churches were not joining at this point, or CC, that means whether it's Chinese speaking or non-Chinese speaking. So building up the solidarity among these Chinese churches, that's first phase. And then the second phase, the Powi movement promotes worldwide evangelization of the Chinese people, beginning first with the Chinese-speaking Chinese. Now, of course, in these churches, among these churches, Chinese-speaking churches still is the majority. And Chinese are famous, especially the Cantonese are famous for its deficiency in linguistic ability. We can speak somewhat, but we can never be perfect. So, and then by our national characteristic, when we cannot master a language, we become shy. We do not want to communicate with a language that we don't understand with other people. So you find that many Chinese students, or some Chinese students who came over to study, they try not to speak English. And so by the time they go home, they still speak very broken or imperfect English. However, we have, in the matter of evangelism, some of us do not have the ability to speak a second language. So the Powi movement promotes that in the second phase, the Chinese should evangelize the Chinese speaking worldwide. And then the third phase, we hope to initiate around 1986, that we should look into the situation of the ethnic Chinese. Now what do we mean by ethnic Chinese? It is LBC, that means all local born. We hope that by that time, the Chinese churches in the diaspora will be drawn to the attention that in our subsequent development, the local born, that means the ARC or ABC, would be very important towards the further development of the Chinese church. And for this reason, in 1984, there will be an ethnic Chinese conference to be held in Hawaii. Just Hawaii, 1984 in July. July 5th to 11th. And at that point, the Powi movement will draw together Thai-speaking Chinese from Thailand, Indonesian-speaking Chinese from Indonesia, English-speaking Chinese from Malaysia and Singapore, Australia, North America, Canada, and so on. And so that will be the first time that different ethnic groups, different groups of ethnic Chinese will meet. We do not know what will be the outcome. They may be as different as the Indians as from the Greeks, we do not know. But that will be a time at which these various groups of ethnic Chinese from different parts of the world would affirm their common heritage and common roots. And And also, in the future, to seek a common goal in the task of world evangelization. But of course, in the future, we should start first with ethnic Chinese evangelization worldwide. So I want to draw your attention, particularly to this phase, those of you who are ABC and ARC, you are more effective in the evangelization of ABC and ARC than any of us OBC. We can speak English, but then our English is limited. Although we can master the language to a certain extent, but we do not think the same way as you do. I'm going to show you how we differ in later on. So what I want to draw your attention to is, in this phase, we have to pay attention to the ethnic Chinese evangelization, which started in 1986. And then by 1991, now in this conference, this is 1983, we are thinking of cross-cultural missionary work. We hope that by 1991, there will be a full-fledged, I shouldn't say promotion, a full-fledged initiation of Chinese going into cross-cultural evangelization. So all of you are at this juncture now, 1983. And we hope that by 1991, that means 7 years, 8 years later, there will be more people like you. You, at this point, you form an initial small group. But we hope that 7 or 8 years later, we will have a larger task force that will go for cross-cultural evangelization. That is where you are at. That's why I want you to see where you are. You are ARC ABC, occupying a very important position. And now God has gathered you all in this conference, missionary conference, for you to see how the world is, where you stand, how you should prepare for yourself. What are some of the things that you should be looking into? So you should be open to this opportunity and see what you can do towards your contribution in this movement. Now then, you may ask, since there are so many different groups of LBC, what are some of our commonalities? Well, I have listed a few. We live in a multi-ethnic environment. Even in North America, we are living in a multi-ethnic environment. You live among Americans. You may have some Negroes, right? And I do not know whether you have some Mexicans or Hispanics. In California, we have a lot of Hispanics. And we are told that by the year 2000, we better master master Spanish, or else we cannot survive in California. But the situation is the same in Malaysia, in Indonesia. There are many, many ethnic groups. So Chinese, local-born Chinese, are living among the ethnic, communities which are multi-ethnic in nature. But even though, like this, we have the heritage of Chinese culture, and also in the church, we inherit the tradition of Chinese church history. Whether it's good or not, it depends on how we look at, how we analyze the situation. And then I find that most of the ethnic Chinese can speak more than one language. I do not know, now I know that the Chinese in Singapore, in Malaysia, definitely can speak more than one or two, sometimes three or four languages. And the American-born Chinese, most of you can speak English, maybe understand, or all of you can speak English. most of you do understand a little bit of Chinese. And then if you're in your school, you take French or another language. So you are you have your linguistic ability, multiplicity of language. However, that is your plus. However, there is also some sort of struggle that goes on in all LBC groups. And that struggle is identity struggle. Now let us focus at the identity struggle of ABCs first. Now in 1983, according to the census, we have in USA 930,000 Chinese people. 55% of them are OBC and 45% of them are ABC. So we are almost equal, ABC and OBC. And these will keep on increasing.
It's the 60,000.
Oh, plus and minus. Well, I don't know. This I borrowed this graph, this transparency from my friend. Oh. I don't know. I'm sorry. You're very sharp. Now let us look at the situation of identity struggle. How many of you were in the panel discussion just now? The majority of you. Now Glenn Schwartz talked about cross-cultural preparation. And then he talked about different kinds of eating habit and accommodation and types of things. Now I'd like you to draw your attention to a model. This model is called Stan Inouye's model of migration or the change of worldview, I should say. Now, in the matter of studying of local-born Chinese, local-born people, the Japanese has done much more work than the Chinese people. So we have to borrow from their study. Now, this represents the immigrant generation, we call the P generation, the parents. Your parents came from Hong Kong or from Southeast Asia. And then that is the first generation. And that is the second generation. This is first generation ABC, second generation ABC. Now why is it that there is identity struggle? Why is it that there is something in you that doesn't agree and make you so frustrated? As our parents migrate from Hong Kong or from Southeast Asia to North America, they carry with them their core value. Now C means core value. Their own value system. In the old value system, they have their particular things of what they call what is right and what is wrong, what is good or what is bad, what is virtue and what is sin. Good or bad is forgivable, but when you sin, it's almost unforgivable. Your parents are not God. They might not forgive sin. They might forgive mistakes. So, but in their core value, they have their particular idea as to what is right, what is wrong. What is good or what is bad? Let me give you some example. You are a Christian, and people ask you the Chinese way of saying hi. They say, have you eaten? They don't say, hi, how are you? Have you eaten? 你吃过饭没有? And most of you say, 吃过了。 And you say to your parents, when your parents say, well, your parents have not eaten. But in order to be polite, they say, oh yes, I've eaten. And then you would say, no, you're telling lies, you haven't eaten. But your parents would say, in their value, if they say that they have not eaten, they will embarrass their friends. So in order to be polite, they have to say they have eaten. So that is good, that is right, and that is virtuous. But in you, as an American born, you would say that this is wrong, because you're telling a lie and that is bad, and if you're a Christian, you are, your parents are sinning. can you see that? So we have different sets of value. So your parents came to USA with a set of value. But of course they need to have some change. If they don't adopt some change, they cannot survive in North America. So in addition to this core value, they have a set of survival value. The survival value are actually quite periphery. Maybe instead of wearing qipao, wearing Chinese dress like a tube shaped type of a Chinese dress, your mother would wear dress, right? And instead of taking buses and trams, she would drive a car. Now all these are but periphery things. They learn to survive. And maybe instead of saying, 吃过饭没有, have you eaten? They will say, hi, how are you? Or most times say, hi. This is the most common way of adaptation. Now these are the survival value. And the survival values are acquired in USA, which they added on top of them. Maybe I should make the circle a little bit flatter. So, if you look at them, superficially, they seem to acquire some American characteristics, but deep down in their heart, they are 100% what? Chinese in their core value. Okay, now you come to the second generation. Come to the second generation, you grow at home, a Chinese home, an immigrant home. And then you also attend school, right? And the school is USA. And this is very much Chinese. So in your core value, you have two sets of values impinging upon you. So you are neither circular, nor ovoid. Now this ovoid-ish shape represents American value. So you have two sets of value inside you. And sometimes these two sets of values conflict with each other. Then how do you deal with it? If you cannot deal with it, you have conflict. Am I a Chinese because you have Chinese values? Or am I an American because I also have American value? Who are you? And the problem with American-born Chinese is that when they cannot settle their problem of the conflict of the two sets of values, they have identity struggle. And the type of identity struggle will hinder their growth and maturity and self-confidence as a person. And that is very detrimental. So if we want the American-born Chinese and American-raised Chinese to grow up properly, that is the number one thing that we have to do. I will tell you what are some of the opinions that I have collected in the past. So this has become your core value, CS. But on top of it, you still have your American survival value. And then the next generation, you have a little bit of C, but more of S. So in the first generation ABC, the conflict is the greatest because both sets of value are just as strong. But in the second generation, the Chinese value got a little bit diminished, and sometimes the double dosage of American value can overcome the conflict, and the second generation become more American. But however, still, the conflict is not that much. He may be more comfortable by being a second generation ABC. But sometimes this little tiny C, sometimes we kick him from inside. So he will feel uncomfortable. And we find that in the second generation ABC or in the second generation American born Japanese, they would want to go back to Japan in order to deal with this value. Once they go back to Japan, that is why I think the way I do. Because Japanese think this way. And if they can accept that, then they are settled in their mind. So this model explains where our conflict comes in as ABC or ARC, or first generation or second generation. Now let me tell you some of the things that cause us to have conflict in our identity crisis. Now first I'm going to show you this set. Now, these are OBC values, which is C in our diagram. And this is American value or survival values for those of us who try to survive in North America. According to, you may find that most OBCs are very ethnocentric. Your parents may say, we Chinese do this, we Chinese do not do that, we Chinese are so great, and so on and so forth. And they may, one ABC once wrote a poem. She said, we Chinese, now I cannot recite in the exact wording, but I let you know the idea. She said, what is the Chinese people? Chinese people are proud of their heritage. They may be poor, they may be oppressed, but they are proud of themselves. So Chinese are ethnocentric. And maybe because this is why we do not go into cross-cultural missionary effort that much, because we're ethnocentric. But the ABC are egocentric. It's not. He doesn't say, we Chinese. He will say, I am so great. Everything starts with I. Then, in the upbringing, the OBC are taught to be obedient to their parents. Filial piety is the highest virtue in the Chinese tradition. So many of us here who have dedicated ourselves to full-time ministry, the first stumbling block, or the first hindrance, would usually come from the parents. If your parents do not want you to take this path, what do you do? Most OBC would find that it is very difficult because my parents do not agree to my decision. Then I may not have a chance to go into the mission field at all. But the ABC are taught to be to be independent. I make my own decision. And after I make my own decision, I inform my parents, right? They don't feel particularly obligated to the family members. If my brother goes broke, I would feel very very concerned. I would share my riches with him. But maybe American-born Chinese would say, if I were American-born Chinese, I would say, when my brother goes broke, I will lend him some money. But he has to return that to me. Let's move very quickly to the world. Huh? For the OBC, whatever happens in the society in the world is none of my business. But the ABC would say, let us do something about it. The OBC would say, why doesn't somebody do something about it? But he himself is not involved. Now we come to the most crucial thing in the decision making. Among the Chinese people, OBC, decision making is by consensus. And if you make your way to the church board in a church, if that is an immigrant church, you'll find in a meeting people all these OBC talk around the subject seemingly without making a decision. You just do not know. If you are the secretary, you have a hard time. You really do not know what is the conclusion. Because they talk around, and then there is a common consensus, but they will not spell out their common consensus. But being an OBC, and as a secretary, I would know what is the common consensus. I can guess, I can tell, I can feel, so I write down the common consensus, even without their spelling out. And as I pass a minute back to them, they would agree. They would pass in the next meeting. However, as an ABC, it's like, what are these people trying to talk about? They seem to be beating around the bush without making any formal motion. You want to have anything that is spelled out in clear and clear cut and explicit. So these are some of the things that we find difficult. Now I'm going to show you another set of differences. In the thesis of an MA student in psychology in the school, in the Fuller School of Psychology, the difference is OBC are group oriented, ABC are individualistic, something like that, like what we showed you just now. OBC have duty and obligation to parents, and the ABC ask for individual rights and privileges, so that will sometimes will create conflict in the family. The OBC family works according to hierarchy and status, but the ABC would vote for egalitarianism. Stephen Tong said to me the other day, "So why is it that the speakers do not have a table and we have to line up?" I told him, "Well, don't you know that we are in America? This is an egalitarian society. Everybody is equal, whether speaker or non-speaker." And Stephen talks about in the Far East, it's not like that. So we are in America. OBC, the rest you can see for yourself. OBC would want to respect people, but then the ABC would emphasize a lot on self-assertion. Now these are some of the things that would upset us as we try to grow up. So what do? We seem to be taught a set of values at home, but another set of value in school. What is the way to handle this? Some people say, I would reject my Chinese tradition. I will go all the way to ABC. In the summertime, I consulted one of the leading clinical psychologists in Canada about the ABC-OBC problem. And she said, the only way to tackle this problem is to affirm your OBC heritage and affirm your ABC heritage. Know that you have both heritage inside you and be able to discern under what circumstances you function with what set of values. And as a cross-cultural missionary, you have to do the same thing. You are working with the people of a different culture. You have to know what are their values in comparison with yours. And you have to know when to function as what or who. When to function as an ABC and when to function as an OBC. And be at home with this kind of differential functioning. I think I have been in North America long enough. I was in Canada for 10 years and now 2 years in USA. And I find that I can switch back and forth without too much conflict in myself. So I have become sufficiently bicultural. So that means for you, ABC and ARC, you have to affirm both of your heritage and be able to function as a bicultural person. Okay? Now, let me give you some examples of what are the what are some of the things that the LBCs in different parts of the world are doing as far as cross-cultural missionary work is concerned? In Sabah, do you know where Sabah is?
Malaysia.
Yeah, Sabah is East Malaysia. In my survey of the Chinese, of the different pockets of Chinese population in different parts of the world, Sabah is the district that has got the highest percentage of Chinese Christians in relation to the Chinese population. It has a long heritage of the Christian faith, because when the Chinese first moved to Sabah, they went out as a community of Christians of the Basel Church. So they started out as 100% Christian, and later on, after Communist China has taken over China, then some more non-Christian Chinese migrated to Sabah. And so at this point, Sabah has got about 9% Christians. I think USA has got 8%. So Sabah still is a top in Christian percentage among the Chinese people. Now the Sabah LBC are sufficiently at home enough with their country. And so they have gone into different types of cross-cultural missionary effort among themselves. Now in Sabah we have Malaysians, we have Chinese, and we have a lot of indigenous people who are not Malays. That means they are the tribal people. So the Chinese are beginning to go inland, up the rivers, up the mountain, to work among the tribal people, the indigenous people, as a cross-cultural missionary. Maybe the most prominent case of cross-cultural missionary work among LBC would be the Singaporeans. Now Singapore is a very small country, and it's also a very cosmopolitan area, and they speak English. It is so small that many people would want to go out. So we will see a lot of Singaporeans involved in different types of cross-cultural missionary work. I saw Singaporeans in Nigeria, in Niger, and then I saw many Singaporeans working on Operation Mobilization. I think they have a booth downstairs. So these are the Singaporeans are most cross-cultural in terms of cross-cultural mission, and of course in Indonesia it's the same way. So right now we find that the third world countries are beginning to pay attention to the Asians, the Chinese. I went to Nigeria in 1979 and lived there for a month to look at the different kinds of work of Sudan Interior Mission. And many of the African church leaders told me that in Africa, they are starting, because of nationalism, they are starting to reject Caucasian missionaries. They feel that the Caucasians brought with them their imperialism, their colonialism. They did not want that. And so the government do not welcome Caucasian missionaries, whereas they welcome Chinese, because China has done a lot of work for the African countries. Well, as Chinese people, a Chinese person who go there, the Africans could not distinguish who is from China, who is from America. That was our yellow face. And as I walked the street in Nigeria, and I found a lot of the Nigerians in the car, they waved to me. And I don't know, yelling something, I don't know what that is, but it's a friendly gesture. They welcome the Chinese people. So the third world countries are beginning to send out their Macedonian call to the Chinese people. They said, we want you Chinese, we want you Asians. We welcome you more than the Americans. And I think this kind of situation is also known to the Caucasian world. So right now there is a movement among the international Christian community. They think that in the 20th century, for the rest of the 20th century, and maybe in the 21st century, the task of world mission should be an international enterprise. That means something that could be joined by Caucasians, by Asians, by Africans, by Latin Americans. So the trend would come. The trend looks as if in the near future, maybe 10 or 20 years later, we will see a lot of international projects or internationalized projects in terms of world mission. So you people who speak the English language fluently, all you need to do is to master another language. If I go to Africa, I have to master my third language, and that will be very difficult for me. So you are standing in a very advantageous position to think in terms of the third world cross-cultural missions as well as international Christian ministry. Now, I cannot talk about mission without giving some definition of mission. Long, long ago, when North Americans talk about missionary, they want to have a missionary, they would want to send a missionary to the jungle somewhere in the Congo, or to Asia, to China in the inland, maybe in Gansu or in Honan. But now the word mission, for us, the Chinese reality, I feel that we need to take a broader sense. Why? Mainly because of the fact that among the Chinese people, there are so many that are non-Chinese, that are non-Christians. And secondly, even among the Chinese people, even if you try to evangelize a Hakka, it is cross-cultural. Because we speak different dialects, and the Hakka women work very hard. Hakka women are the breadwinners. So they are of a different culture. If you go to the tribal people in Taiwan, you'll find that their language is different, their dress is different. They like, we as OBC are very conservative, we don't express our emotion that much. We don't respond to jokes that much. When you go to the mountain people, they dance and they sing. When they work with Christmas or after harvest, they dance and they sing. Everyone participates. So it's a totally different kind of culture. They're very expressive. They are not conservative at all. So even among the Chinese people, when we work among a different group, it is a cross-cultural type of thing. So we do not need to send people. To a distant land in order to make him a cross-cultural missionary. You can work among the Vietnamese refugees, and you are still a cross-cultural missionary. So this is the kind of trend that the world is heading for, because at this point we have noticed the symptom of global communities. That means in large cities in the world, they have different ethnic groups and different cultures within. So even within one city, you can have cross-cultural missionary. However, even in spite of this, we should have two different terms. Local mission. That means you work in around your local district, in near neighbor. Can be cross-cultural, can be monocultural. And it can be foreign mission. That means I shouldn't say foreign mission, overseas mission. That means you are sent over to a distant land. As long as you are sent, that is a mission. For myself, I assume this very broad definition because of our reality at this point. Now, what are some of the things that you, ABC, and ARC can be involved with? Let's go to concrete terms. I have listed out several possibilities. The most urgent at this point is pastoral ministry in the maturing Chinese church. Most of the Chinese churches at this point are immigrant Chinese churches. The immigrants came, they flocked into the church, even though the church doesn't want it. There is an ABC church in Los Angeles that has been established for maybe 40 years, all ABC. And now, the immigrants, fresh immigrants, Los Angeles is one of the new immigrant centers. And the immigrants, and of course this church is in Chinatown. And the new immigrants just flocked into the church, and they almost wanted, and now they have become something like an immigrant church with ABC minority and OBC majority. But this is not a healthy trend. If we have all the time OBC dominant churches, the ABC will leave the church. If you can never fight your way onto the leadership, you can never have a say, and the pulpit never accommodates your needs, you will feel so discouraged. You will leave. I feel that at this point, looking into the future, near future, we should expect that the ABC-OBC churches should continue to strike a balance. And if the immigrants continue coming, I think we will have a state of equilibrium here. That means we will have this kind of ideal church. In an ideal church, we have OBC and ABC. Both are just as strong, and both are just as vital. However, in order to have this kind of churches, what do you need? You need OBC pastors. You need ABC pastors. But both of these kind of pastors need to be what? Need to have an understanding of the bicultural situation. I have visited, I've spent 3 weeks visiting different churches in 7 cities, looking into the ABC, OBC situation. And I find that a lot of the immigrant churches have not tried. They said, okay, I'm going to get an ABC pastor. So they got one ABC pastor. But then they got the man, but they have not changed their mentality. They still expect the ABC to be quiet, to be conservative, to be non-expressive in their opposition. And so the ABC pastor has it very difficult, because whereas all these agitated, frustrated ABCs under him are ready to go into a violent revolution. And he is the man who got in between. So what does that mean? It means that in the future, in North America, we should train more OBC for you, OBC, who are here. We should train more OBC that has bicultural vision. Or bifocal vision, bicultural values, okay? And we should also train ABC to be bifocal people. That means both pastors, whether it's OBC or ABC, should function flexibly between the two congregations. If these two pastors can function harmoniously, then the two congregations would learn to adopt this bicultural vision. That is our only hope. But who can achieve this hope at this point? It's you. I don't mean to lay the responsibility heavily on you, but you are the only hope. Well, okay, you are the most appropriate candidate. he will not agree with my theology. So if we don't have this kind of people, then we would see ABC leaving the churches, ABC leaving the churches, and they will be the lost generation. For the past 40 years, that means starting from 1940 to now, we have lost a whole generation of ABC. None of the churches can retain ABC. In a funeral, in the summer, an ABC passed away. He's 80 years old. He grew up in an ABC church. And he's passed away. There are more than 100 ABC friends, all old friends, gathered to the, for this funeral. And of the 80-some that went to the same church with him, only one, only he, still continue to attend church. And so the other 70-something ABC friends have dropped out from the church. So for the past 40 years, we have lost. Well, if say 20 years is a generation, we have lost 2 generations of ABC. I can see that this is the most urgent and most important. Now, of course, how about the ARC? The ARC is more advantageous, because if you came here in your teenage years, you have more OBC values than the ABC. So that means it is easier for you to adopt the bicultural vision. So we depend a lot on these people in order to see the Chinese church to continue existing. Or else the American-born Chinese would remain the most enriched and the most pathetic people in North America. Now the second group, of course, you will say, is pastoring a mission? It is a mission, because among the American-born Chinese, that is the people that is least reached with the gospel. The smallest percentage of Christians are found among them. They're the least interested in the gospel. So even pastorate among them is a type of missions. Then, what is the second possibility? The second possibility is missionary outreach to ABC. Someone told me that the ABC are very unresponsive when I first came to North America in 1981. I did not believe him. So you know what I did? I lived in the city of Pasadena, and I made a telephone survey. I picked out the Pasadena telephone directory. I picked out all the Chinese names. And every 10 Chinese names, I made a call. And I found that the American-born Chinese make up about 25% of the people of the Chinese population in Pasadena. None of them are Christians. And then I said, okay, this is only one experiment. I came up from empirical science. I was a student of plant biochemistry. When I did an experiment, I did it one time, two times, three times, 10 times, 20 times. By the 20th time, my experiment was perfect. So I learned from mistakes. So I said, okay, the next year, I said, 1982. I said, well, maybe my pilot experiment is not that reliable. So I would do it again. So I picked up all the Chinese names again from the new telephone directory. And every five names, I make a telephone call. And again, 25% are ABC. None of them. None of them are Christians. And this time I was more brave. I asked some of them, why are you interested in any religion at all? I told my informant that I was a student, a first year student in North America, and I have to do an anthropology project. So most of them are very willing to help me, thinking, where did you come from? I came from Hong Kong. So most of them are very happy to talk to me. And many of them told me that, let me tell you, we American-born Chinese are not interested in religion. So what do you go in the weekends? Well, we go to ball games, or we have different kinds of clubs to join. So I believe in what my friend told me. ABC remain the most enriched group in North America. And then, however, one time, I talked to IVF staff, I talked to Campus Crusade staff, and then I talked to the director of Japanese Evangelical Mission. I talked to them about my concern for ABC being the least reached group in North America. And they told me, no, the picture is not that hopeless. Once they get out of campus, they are very hopeless. Once they start to climb the sociological ladder, then they're not interested. But the funny thing is, on campus, the American-born Chinese remain the most receptive group to the gospel. So much so that for the Japanese friend who started the Japanese Evangelical Mission, he started it with a view, with a hope, with a purpose, an objective, and goals of reaching American-born Japanese. However, he ended up with a majority of American-born Chinese. So he's in trouble. Yeah, he could win people to Christ, but not the intended target. So what does that mean? That means that if we want to work, and you want to be a missionary, a pioneer missionary, in North America, among our own people, American-born Chinese on campus is our target group. And if we can win them for Christ, there are two routes to go. One route is to bring them into this kind of church, but put a good pastor there, that is a bifocal pastor. Another approach is that you plant a church among these American-born Chinese. Among these American-born Chinese. Let them develop on their own. There are two approaches to do it. I think somebody is reminding me of my time. Okay. My outline is very detailed, so that's why I'm very, even though I don't finish it, I don't feel very guilty about it. So of course we can think of the missionary outreach to new immigrants in the new immigrants in North America, 45,000 of them each year. To the non-Chinese people, we can always think of the possibility of China. There are a few American-born Chinese teaching English as second language in China. That is a possibility. Or you can work as a tent maker in China in the future, and other possibilities. But however, in order to be effective, there are four things you must do. You must understand the overseas-born Chinese. What I mean is that you have to understand their values. You have to understand their value, the overseas-born Chinese. Not only understanding their values, but you must affirm in your heart that you also have this set value and that set of value. Feel be comfortable with both sets of values. And then some people told me that American-born Chinese, they love ease and leisure. However, the overseas-born Chinese have something in themselves. If they're poor, they make it. They want to be rich, and they strive for it. If they don't have education, they strive for it. But the American-born Chinese are not as aggressive in this way. So build up your pioneering missionary spirit and be aggressive and ambitious for the Lord. That is my advice for you American-born Chinese. You have led a life of ease, whereas the overseas-born Chinese have always had to struggle. And in the struggle, we have built our determination, our strength. And we can set our goals and work towards it. But for you, you have to work particularly towards that. Involve in projects that can exercise your creativity. Involve in projects that you can exercise your faith. So much so that you find your God a living God, your faith is a living faith. Just as what Stephen Tong said, you can never preach greater, bigger than your God. How great is your God and how great is his Christianity to you? That is something you have to wrestle with. Of course, you need formal and informal training. I suggest several things that you have to do. If you go into a seminary, okay, you got all these. If you don't have a seminary, you work along these lines. Learn to study the Bible well, basic Bible studies. Read some books on theology and church history. Read some books on culture and cross-cultural perspectives, worldviews. Know your American culture and know the Chinese culture. Read not only Western church history, read also Chinese church history, because in the Chinese church history, you will find that in reading that through, you will understand why some OBC Christians behave the way they do. Because we came from a different theological tradition in our Chinese church. And that is very important. Not only will this help you to see their set of values, but it will help you to see why OBC Christians think the way they do and why you think the way you do. That is very important. And of course, you have to have spiritual formation and discipleship training. And it is good for you to be involved in some discipleship training programs. So you know some programmatic tools that you can use. And last but not least, if you have the money and the time, make a trip to China, make a trip to Hong Kong. Know the Chinese culture. No one can learn culture except by immersing yourself in it. Even though 2 months or 3 months or 2 weeks or 3 weeks is very good. I was in Canada and I started a Canadian-born Chinese fellowship, and most of my kids are now grown up. And everyone told me that after they went to Hong Kong, they went to China, they feel very much at home with themselves. And I asked one of the kids, after you've been to China, what is your feeling? And he said, I feel both good and bad. I feel bad because China is so poor. I feel good because I found myself. So in order to stabilize yourself for the ministry of God, that is something that you can do. And as conclusion, let me express my hope for all of you. All of you are ARC or ABC. You have tremendous responsibilities on your shoulders. God has brought you up in this environment. Building because of this environment, God has built into you a special capacity and capability, which we OBCs do not have. So it is your gift, and it's up to you to exercise it. And in this conference of World Mission, you are being challenged to a number of possibilities. But I present to you the possibilities here for the American-born Chinese people. Thank you very much. Let's bow down our heads for closing prayer. Father, we feel that your Spirit is among us today. We thank you for the particular situation that you have brought us up. Many of us have struggled through a lot of things, a lot of conflicts as we grew up. But now as we look back, we can thank you for all these that we have experienced. Father, we entrust our bicultural heritage to thy hand, that you will make them as useful tools towards the expansion of the kingdom of God. Help us to be brave. Help us to be courageous. Help us to trust in you and rely on you. And help us to be faithful in our promise to you, whatever promise that we have made. Father, we pray that you will bless us as we go home, and you will continue to speak to us and lead us to the mission field if you call us. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Amen.